Hello, my name is Tosh and I'm an alcoholic. And tonight I have the pleasure to introduce our speaker tonight, Richard. His clean date is 10-20-82. He has 37 years, 3 months, and 23 days. And his advice to the newcomer is get a book, read it, get a sponsor, do the steps. And something interesting about him is he has been married for 11 and a half years to his beautiful wife, Maria, and she's a normie. So welcome the speaker.
Thank you. Thank you, Natasha, and thank you to Bill for asking me to speak tonight, and thank you for the whole Valley Group for setting this up, and I'd like to be here, and it's my pleasure to be of service, okay? I might do something a little different tonight. I might ask some questions. You just raise your hand. Like, I'll just see, just to give you an example, I'll try this. Has anybody here been married at least 5 times? Let's see, we got Gary, Bo, me, anybody else? Okay, well, see, what am I doing? I'm looking for similarities. That's what I'm doing. Okay, now back there, Janet, you said you had 5 days. Did anybody have less than 5 days? Who has 24 hours?
Yes, 2 days.
All right, come up here for a minute, please. Come up here. Do you have a book?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Who does not have a book that just has a few days sober? All right, come up here. This is your book.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll go ahead and start talking. You know, one of the things that that I want to do is I want to relate my speech to the book. Thank you. Read it. It tells everything you need to know in that book. Okay. The other thing I want to say is, we didn't get here by accident. I know that anybody came in here did not come in on a winning streak. So I've been here. This is my second time being here. My original sobriety date was March 23rd of 1980. That was almost 40 years ago. But I did it my way. Half measures avails you nothing. I did like maybe 0.25, which is like 1/4 measure. That didn't work either. And I went back out. So my sobriety now is 1982 instead of 1980. I want to talk a little bit about the book and then how it relates to this. For a topic tonight, because, you know, I've been sober longer than I drank. I actually drank for about 15 years, the first 10 of which I was a periodic, and then an everyday drinker for about 5 years. And I went like this. I'll talk about that. But I went downhill very fast, and I sobered up 4 days before I turned 35. So I haven't had a drink since I'm 34, and I've been sober over 37 years. So most of my life I've been not drinking. But I want to show you why, but what I did different the second time to stay sober, okay? So, raise your hand, Maria. That's my wife, so and that's my sponsor over there. That's Bo. Bo, raise your hand. Bo, raise your hand. You're going to hear from Bo in June. He's going to have 45 years in June. Okay. And a lot of you are my friends, you know, you go to some of the same meetings. Bill wanted me to tell you how I have been of service, okay? I have been a member of H&I back in the late 80s, okay? But some of the other things that I do presently is I'm a secretary at the Men's Stag meeting on Friday morning, attitude modification at the Cafe 210. Also, I'm a secretary for the a new meeting we just started in Tulare at the Gym Street, the same where Cloudbuster is, on Wednesday. We have a meeting there on Monday, and it's a book study. And I've been secretary at other meetings as well in the past. I've done service work outside of AA. For example, I used to go to Koinonia Christian Fellowship in Hanford, and used to go to the jail every weekend and go in and have Bible study with the inmates in the jail. I visited a girl that I saw on television on Joan London show that's on death row. And she was crying because her mother would not visit her. So I got a hold of her mother, and I took her mother up there, and her mother started going to see her. And I visited her for 6 years, almost every single weekend. You know, hour and a half drive up there, spend 6 hours there, hour and a half back. But you know what? I'm the one that benefits. She's still on death row. But that's, you know, that's being... I'll get to this, but we have to be good Samaritans. On page 97 of the book, it says we have to be good Samaritans every day, not a kindly act once in a while. My sobriety really is based upon trusting God and helping others. You know that unity thing? It's a we, unity, service to others, and we'll stay recovered. Okay? All right. Sobriety is the most important thing in my life. Today is the most important day. They said I was sober 37 years, 3 months, and 23 days. The most important day is that last one. That's today. And if I make it to midnight, then tomorrow will be my most important day of sobriety. Because we all are just one drink away from not having sobriety. Okay, I wrote a poem for the newcomer, believe it or not. And I've never wrote a poem in my life. I did this last week because I was sitting at my computer trying to figure out what I'm going to say. And, I wrote some things up so I wouldn't forget. But I wrote this little poem. It says, "Welcome to AA, my new friend. If you find yourself in AA but don't want to stay, brother or sister, that's okay. We do ask that you stay for at least one day. You actually might find that you want to stay. Here in AA, we often say, just for today. We will love you even if you don't like us. Or if you're really shy, we won't judge you even if you're just dry. If you're detoxing and you feel like a beer, just grab some coffee and sit over here. If someone sent you our way, you might find yourself wanting to stay. We welcome you with a handshake and a hug. It's okay if you leave us with a shrug. The desire to quit drinking is all that you need. Keep coming back, we earnestly plead. We love you a lot and we really do care. So do yourself a favor and pull up a chair." Okay? That's for the new person. There's a couple of things that keep me in AA and keep me in doing the steps and all that. And it's because of these promises on page 83. I'm not going to read them to you, but I will say that it does give you a new freedom, a new happiness, serenity, peace. Your whole outlook on life will change, and you won't have fear of people. Economic security will leave you. You intuitively know how to handle things that used to baffle you, and you will suddenly realize that God is doing for you what you could not do for yourself. So read those promises as the motivation to want to stay here. All right. Before I start, this is a letter from Judge Schwartz. I'll get there, but I want to tell you what Judge Schwartz said about me. I borrowed some money. My construction company kind of went belly up because the interest rates, mortgage money went up to like 17.5%. I had 23 houses I couldn't give away, lost everything I owned. So I went down to borrow some money at the bank. Start another business. I was going to have somebody run it and I'd do the books and stuff. And what happened was, this banker that I went to in downtown Sacramento said, "You know that I could lend you the money for a business, a new start, but I got a better idea. There's this company, it's a brand new oil company, and they're selling stock in this oil company, and I'll lend you the money to buy some of the stock, and there you have 10 wells are going to drill right away." And I had this lady friend that was with me, and she said she'd do it too. And we flew back to Oklahoma. We checked it out. All seemed legit. We borrowed the money. The problem was, it was a scam. There never was going to be any oil wells. And what happened, I got taken, and about 30 other people got taken. The banker got taken. And things didn't work out the way we planned. Julie, this friend of mine, put a shotgun in her mouth and blew her head off. She was an alcoholic too. I didn't do that. But what I did was I thought, I worked hard all my life. I graduated law school, worked my way through college, left home at 16, all that stuff. And I made all this money. It took me years to make it. And lost it just like this. So I threw a temper tantrum, the best way I could explain it. And I took my big book and I threw it in the dumper. Boom, off I went for about 8 months. And in that 8 months period of time, I drank the way I wanted to. Now, not everybody gets that chance. Because before, when I was practicing the law, I had two faces. I'd be the lawyer and then I'd go out there and drink with the bikers at night. When I was a teacher, I was already sober. Didn't fly that game. But when I was working at the probation department in Bakersfield, I'd go hang out with the only thing I could say, I hung out in bars like, some of you know that song by Toby Keith, I Love This Bar. It's kind of it's not your high dollar country club, believe me. I like to do that because I grew up in a bar in Bakersfield. I really did. I lived in the bar. Walked to the back door, walked into my bedroom. I'll talk about that in a minute. But anyway, here's the long and short of it. It was an illegal loan. You cannot borrow money to invest in a speculative thing, you know, since the stock market thing and all that. But what happened was I ended up in South Carolina. In July, I took off in December of 81. In July of 82, I said, I'm done. Now, I'll tell you something. I've never shared this with a group before. Because when I got here, I was on federal probation. Well, supervision, I'll explain that in 2 seconds here. But what happened was, I've never been able to share this with a group and this letter. But what happened was, I went and turned myself in, did a fourth step with the FBI, told them everything that I knew. The guy, the banker, we were still friends. He says, go talk to him and let me know if they want to talk to me too. Well, of course they did. So I told him, well, you know, David will come down and talk to you. He says, David's going to talk to us? I said, yeah. I wasn't snitching anything. David was the one that said, go talk to him, you know. So I went down and got David. We both went back and we told him the whole deal. We got scammed. We borrowed the money illegally. We got scammed. Our intentions were great. My mother used to say, there are people in hell with good intentions. But it didn't work. You know, it was a federal. Now, I'll tell you what it was. It was a violation, to be more specific. It was a violation of 18 code, U.S. code, section 1014. You know what it's punishable by? This is scary. It scared me. $1 million fine and or 30 years in federal prison. I mean, that's, you know, I was only like, you know, young. It's time. I figured that's the rest of my life. And what happened was, you know, I was a lawyer. I practiced law in Tampa. I was a public defender. I knew the system. And I just said, I'm not gonna fight nothing. I'm just gonna plead guilty. So in arraignment, I went up, and I said, I'm guilty. And Judge Schwartz looked at me and says, where's your lawyer? And I said, Your Honor, I am a lawyer, but I just want to plead guilty. He said, Mr. Walker, I know your lawyer. I got all your paperwork here. I know all about you. He said, I'm not going to accept your plea. I want you to talk to this federal public defender over here. I said, okay. So I went and talked to her and came back 2 weeks later. And what he told me was, I'm going to give you what's called a deferred entry of judgment. What it means is you're not going to have a conviction, a felony conviction, and you have to agree to being on probation, federal probation, for 5 years. And if you drink or do anything illegal, get arrested, I will send you to prison. So here I am. Good. Thank you. And so what happened was, grab a seat, my friend.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Let me hear your testimony. Please, talk to me.
Okay.
Teach me the rules. We'll learn.
Okay. That's all right. Have a seat. Anywhere. Welcome. So what happened was, I was on federal supervision. Okay. And that's not the end of it. I had a probation officer in Fresno, because I sobered up in Sacramento. I went to a recovery house in Sacramento called Progress House. I was there for 5 years. I was 14 months sober before I got the, you know, the legal system is slow, before I went to in front of the arraignment in front of Judge Schwartz. But what happened was, I had a probation officer named Acosta, and as luck would have it, later on I get this job, I'm going to cover that too, in Tulare, and taught GED for 33 years, and I retired last June of 2018, almost 2 years ago. But what was funny about it is, this probation officer in Fresno, his aunt also taught, Pauline Costa taught at the adult school. And Alan had told her about me. And she knew, and I knew, but we never talked about it. I was on federal probation. Or supervision, not probation. Anyway, so that's not the end of it. Here's the part that's in it. Now, what I'm telling you is what I consider a miracle. First of all, he didn't accept my plea. That's a miracle, first of all. But then, more importantly than that, after 2.5 years, I got off of supervision, And I applied to be reinstated to the Florida bar. Not because the Florida bar at that time, I didn't say anything to them. I didn't get disbarred. But what happened is I didn't pay my dues, and so I wasn't active. So I wrote a letter and told them everything. And then I wrote a letter to Judge Schwartz and said, would you send them a letter explaining what happened? And I have it here. I want to read it to you. And why am I reading this? There's two reasons I stay here. The promises and miracles. Okay? And this is a miracle as far as I'm concerned. This is a letter to the Florida Bar from Judge Schwartz. I copied it. I don't have the original at home. It says, he's explaining to the Florida Bar the effective deferred entry is, as you know, and he tells them about this. And this is what he says about me. I can assure you that I use the procedure sparingly. To put it mildly, in the past 7.5 years, in which I have done a number of sentencings virtually every Thursday morning, I believe I have used deferred entry judgment only 3 times. Notwithstanding that, I have imposed straight probation upon conviction many, many times. I felt from the very beginning that Mr. Walker presented one of those rare cases that merited use of this exceptional procedure, and I am pleased to report that my opinion proved to be fully justified. He has equaled and usually surpassed our optimistic expectations, and as you are probably also aware, I signed an early determination of probation order after 2.5 years because of his exemplary conduct and readjustment to an alcohol-free life. Now this part he doesn't really understand alcoholism because he says this. When a person has pulled himself up from the depths, I didn't pull myself up from the depths, God did it for me. But he's a judge. As Mr. Walker has, most people, I think, enthusiastically support full statement. I am no exception. And I do, in fact, recommend favorable consideration of the application. Now, what's a miracle? I mean, I'm looking at going to, I didn't think I'd get 30 years, but I thought I might get 10, seriously. And I don't know about paying back $1 million, but you know how long that was going to take me. But the point is, it's those kind of things that let me know what? There's a God. I didn't even ask for that. And in my belief and opinion, God touched that judge's heart. I didn't do anything, just said guilty. That's it. Okay. Now, I'll tell you about some other miracles, but let me tell you what I want to do. I'm going to read a little bit out of this big book and show you how it relates to me in that trusting God. You see, when I first came in here, the first time in March of 80, I believed in God, always have. Or your higher power, if you don't like that term, God. But the point was, I didn't trust him. See, those kind of things made me trust God. Another thing, I might as well throw it out there now and then get into this, is that I owed the IRS $30,000. So here I am on federal supervision working for $225 a month. And my rent was $235. So I went back and started working for $5 an hour. Now, in 1979, I made $180,000 in that 1 year. And here I am in 1983, working for $5 an hour. Actually, that was a good job. The previous job was just, clean these offices. You know something else that's funny? Those offices that I cleaned for my business partners, it was on Shaw Avenue, 2500 Shaw Avenue, West Shaw. You know what's there now? The Fresno Fellowship. Coincident? I think not. Yeah. They had a building there. Since then, they sold it and everything and built. So I looked for the 2500. They don't have anymore. They got a 2501, 2502. But isn't that ironic? I cleaned that building. When I got out of the recovery house and moved to Fresno, I got a job cleaning the offices of my ex-business partners who were multi-millionaires. And you know what? One day I walked out the door, and the sun was setting. I was looking out, and I thought, I've never been this happy. I wasn't afraid of anything. You know why? Once you come to a point where your worst fears happen, like going completely bust, figure you're going to prison, and you turn out okay, you start looking at little things. I look for the presence of God in everything I say and do. I do. I walk the dogs on a daily basis. Now that I said dogs, I have to tell you about something else. This room right here, in 1990, I used to go to a lot of meetings here. And I got me a little dog named Lucky. And he was born August the 2nd of 1990. And I put him in my coat and came to meetings here. And that little dog, that little miniature schnauzer, was like a chick magnet. All the girls, and just one day, come over and pet me. Oh, yeah, come on, you turn. I had that dog until July of 2007, a month from being 17 years old. The reason I'm mentioning that is I feel very, very loved by dogs. When I was in the recovery house, there's like 30 guys. The guy that owned the property, he had a house there and let the recovery house lease it, had another house built, had a dog named Sonny. Every day the dog would come down. Some of the guys ignored the dog, not me. I petted that dog every day. Over a year and a half later, I go back, that dog still remembers me. I've had people that go over to their house. This one guy that I worked for, he had a Dalmatian in the back, fenced up in the side of the house. Every day I went over to his house to go to work, I would pet Daisy. One day he says, why don't you just take that dog home? Now, why am I talking about the dog when I'm supposed to be talking about God? Because I talk to my dogs and tell them I love them. And I didn't hear any voices, but I'm telling you for a fact, God talked to me. And this is what he told me. He said, Richard, as much as that dog loves you, that's just a little taste of how much I love you. You know? Let me tell you something else that's funny. I was single for 8 years. Been married 4 times. All my wives before this nice normie here were wild and crazy like me and drank. All alcoholics. I was an alcoholic, probably a codependent, also adult child of an alcoholic. I used to read over hundreds of books. I like to read on the disease. But when I asked her to marry me, I was single for 8 years. And I had this Bible study in my house. And one guy was engaged, the other guy was married. And he said, we're going to pray that you find a wife. And I said, no, don't do that, please. I mean, 4 times, you get 3 strikes in baseball. I've had 4 strikes. I'm good, you know. But they said, no, tell us what you want in a wife. I said 3 things. I want a wife that will pray with me. I want a wife that will work out with me. And I want a wife that loves dogs. And she said yes. Big mistake. No, just kidding. She said yes. But here's what's ironic. I said, you pick the date. You know what the date she picked? Remember I told you Lucky? I had him in 1999. His birthday was August the 2nd of 1990. And she said, let's get married August the 2nd. Let me tell you something else. The barber that cut my hair for 20 years, that's his birthday, August the 2nd. The guy that was in the Bible study with me, his anniversary date is August 2nd. See, if you look for signs, God will let you know that's a good decision. Intuitively, we will know how to handle things that baffle you. Intuitively. I never wanted to be a teacher, ever. They told me in college, you should be a teacher. You love school. I'll tell you why I love school. I got nothing from home. I didn't know my dad. My mom always told me he was dead. Well, that dead guy called me when I was 29 years old, and I didn't meet him. He lives in Akron, Ohio. And my mother left my dad in Akron, Ohio, and moved to Fresno. And what happened was, I got nothing at home because my mother had some kind of a mental disorder. I didn't know what it was for years. I could tell you later maybe what it was. But I knew that she wasn't all right, you know. And my brother later on became schizophrenic. So now I'm being raised in the back of a bar, the Sportsman Den in Bakersfield, 2905 East Nile Street across from Hillcrest Shopping Center. Not behind the bar, but in the bar. You open the door and go into my bedroom. And I got this mother that was just loony toony. I mean, you wouldn't believe the things she'd do. She was mean. Always packed a gun. I mean, really mean. She'd punch cops. My brother did the same. Not me. What'd I do? I went to Mass every day. I went to confession on the weekends. And you know why? because I got love somewhere other than home. I'm telling you that not to, for you, please don't feel sorry for me, because they don't need to. I'm happy as hell. But I want you to know, if you came from a screwed up family like mine, you can get love. You can get it in this room. You can get it from teachers. You can get it from the neighbors. I look back on my life, and the teachers and the puppets, I changed schools 20 different times. I don't know if I said this yet, but I've changed residences 120 times. And since I've been married to her, every once in a while I say, I want to move. She says, okay, and we go looking for a place and come back to Tulare. I'm supposed to stay in Tulare, and I'll tell you why that in 1 second. But what I'm saying is, I didn't get love at home. But I did get it at school. For the teachers, right? But I didn't want to be a teacher. I didn't want to be a teacher. They don't make money. Because this is what I thought. My mother was miserable her entire life. She died in. She kicked me out of the house when I was October of my senior year. I was 17 years old. She kicked me out. And she died 30 years later. And what happened was, my brother had taken off already, because he finished high school and moved back to Fresno. We was in Bakersfield. And what happened during that period of time, she got worse and worse and worse. And remember I told you she was mean? She had this big boyfriend named Bob Cease, and he was a nice guy. But he was big, you know, maybe like 260, 6'3". I was like 165, 5'9". She told him to beat me, you know, to beat me up. And it wasn't the first time she told somebody to beat me up. And I told Bob, Bob Cease was there. I said, Bob, you might. I didn't want him to know he could beat me. Of course, he knew he could. I knew he could. But I said, I don't know if you can beat me up, but if you do, you better keep awake your whole life, because I will cut your throat. Well, off to juvenile hall I go. I never went back. And the probation officer did the thing. I went to 5 high schools. I went to Garces my junior year, and East High my senior year. And what happened, when I was at Garces, I had an accident, and they had to cut me open and patch me up, and that kept me out of the draft. But also, I missed a month of school and still got 5 A's and a B plus, and I was taking Latin, algebra, and all those hard courses. So when the probation officer did an investigation of me, when he did, he said, "We're going to find your mother an unfit mother and put me in a foster home." Well, they did put me in a foster home. But I told him, I said, I don't want to do that. I'm working at the gas station. I started working at 12, you know, pulling weeds, paper out, and all that stuff. I've always worked. And I said, I don't want to do that. He said, what do you want? I said, why can't I just move out on my own? He said, I'll tell you what. I'll have your mother sign a paper, emancipation foster case, and you can move out on your own. And then that's it. So I did. So I've been out on my own since then. Now, let's go back to I didn't want to be a teacher. All the signs were there. I love school. Whether it was the nuns or the regular teachers in the public schools, they all liked me. They know I didn't have a dad, and they nurtured me and everything else. So what happened, I wanted to make money. So I graduated Bakersfield Junior College, went to San Jose State. That was really crazy up there. That was during the hippie movement in the 60s. The Vietnam War was going on. And I came from Bakersfield, a very conservative town, and people were walking across town, across campus, smoking marijuana and drinking. I think, oh, this is too crazy for me. So anyway, I ran out. I moved back. I transferred to Fresno, ran out of money, and quit school, and went to work for a finance company, went back and finished Fresno State Extension in Bakersfield, and got a degree in social science. I stayed for 3 years, worked for a probation department, went to law school. So my point was, I was hardworking, pursuing college, doing everything I could so I could be happy, you know, rich and happy. I put that together. It didn't work for me. When I became an attorney, I was a public defender, federal court, regular court, and also private practice. What happened was, I was made an offer by these multimillionaires in Fresno to go up and start a construction company, Pickett Walker Executive Homes in Sacramento. And so, anyway, after I went back out and I end up in a recovery house and I got put on supervision, I was working in Fresno and I end up being transferred to Porterville, working at Jack in the Box. 2 years sober. At 2 years and 4 months sober, I lost the job. Now I'm broke. I'm on federal supervision. What am I going to do? And the IRS caught up with me. I didn't owe them $30,000. They said, you owe us $32,000. I said, what do you want me to do? Can you pay us $200 a month? Yeah. So now I lose the job. I can't even pay the IRS. I'm on federal supervision. What am I going to do? I'm telling you exactly what I did. Right in the corner of Indiana and Morton, I got on my knees in the bathroom by myself and said, God, I am willing to do anything. Anything. I don't know if I go back to Florida or whether I go back up to Sacramento. Give me a clue. I'll do anything. Nothing happened. Twenty minutes later, I get a phone call from Lorene Valentino, Department of Ed, right here in Visalia. Said, this is Lorene Valentino. Do you know who I am? I go, no. She said, you applied for a job here a couple months back, but you weren't qualified for it. But I want to hire you to work with people that are dropping out of high school and help them get their GED. I said, what is a GED? And she said, you know that equivalency test that they give you when you drop out of school? I said, okay, I know what you're talking about. I said, look, I don't have a teaching credential. I've never taught. She says, I don't care. She said, can you come talk to me? Now, this was February the 20th of 85. The next morning, I went to talk to her. I got there like 9 o'clock in the morning. We talked for a little while, and she says, this is not a job interview. There's teachers looking for jobs, right? She calls me 20 minutes after I say that prayer. She calls me, and I go up there, and she tells me, I've already decided to hire you. I just want to know if you want to take the position. And I said, well, what do you want me to do? She said, well, you go over here to Sequoia and get a list of people not graduating. Go to Tulare Adult School, get people not graduating. Go to Visalia Adult School, get people not graduating. And I want you to call them and tell them to come down here, and I want you to tutor them. I said, why are you asking me this? I'm not a teacher. She said, no, but you worked in juvenile hall for 3 years, and you worked in juvenile court, and I think you can help them. You obviously can help them. You can write, right? You graduated law school. I was very good at math, too, by the way. And you know, the first 3 years that I had that job, I got 323 people through the GED. And the schools were getting like maybe 50 a year. It was really not me. It was God working through me. I know that for a fact. Now, after I got reinstated to Florida Bar, I go back spring vacation of 88 to Florida. And I got offered two jobs. One is at Titusville by Cape Canaveral as a prosecuting attorney, and one at Holly Hill by Daytona Beach to be a public defender. I got offered both jobs, 1988. And you know what happened? I came back. You know, it's just Easter vacation. I said, can you guys give me a couple days, because I got more than one offer. They said, yeah, call us. I come back, and you know what? God talked to me again. He said, Richard, I gave you the job teaching. Why would you want to go practice law? To make more money? I said, Richard, that's my conscience talking to me, you know? I said, Richard, that's what got you in trouble in the first place. Just stay where you're at. And so I stayed another 30 years and retired from teaching GED class. I love the job. And today I have a couple of good pensions and Social Security. My wife is still working. But see, God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, let me tell you a couple of things here. Now, the people that are new, this is especially for you. I want you to read, the first thing I want you to read is the doctor's opinion. And it'll tell you in the doctor's opinion before you get to page one. It's in the Roman numerals XXXII 32. He explains, the doctor explains, this is, we believe that the action of these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in an average temperate drinker. In other words, my wife, an average temperate drinker, couldn't be an alcoholic if she wanted to be. They will quit drinking before they become an alcoholic. Why is that important to me? Because people will say to you, well, why can't you quit drinking? Like your brother quit, you know? And it's because you have an allergy. It gets worse. is that these allergic types can never use alcohol in any form, and once having formed a habit, they cannot break it, having lost all their self-confidence and their reliance upon things human. The problems pile up then become astonishingly difficult to solve. Do you think? Right? Among physicians, the general opinion is that the chronic alcoholic is doomed. However, the doctor goes on to say that there was a guy that did sober up, and what he did was to follow the plan in that book. And in that book, he concludes the last paragraph of that doctor's opinion. I earnestly advise every alcoholic to read this book through, and then, though perhaps he came to scoff, he might remain to pray. I want to call you a couple quick things here. I know I've got about 5 minutes left.
Yeah.
Okay. On page 45, it tells you the main object of this book is to find a power greater than yourself. Every man can get well. It says alcohol. On page 43, it says at certain times alcoholics. Defense must come from a higher power. So first of all, I'm trying to establish you have to have a higher power of your choosing. Now I want to tell you about my higher power because I'm not going to have a chance to read all this. I was raised by those nuns and they loved me. And you know what they taught me? God loved me. You know? I was raised a Catholic. And as a child, I felt loved because God loved me, the nuns loved me, everything was good. But somewhere along the line, as I got older, like in high school, some of the things that I wanted to do, they said, you know, it wasn't good, you know. And I remember, just to give you an example of what I'm talking about, there's a girl named Sarah in eighth grade, and she looked like a Playboy bunny, and I kept thinking about her, and even the thought of thinking about her was a sin. So I was just doomed again, you know what I mean? I was really in bad shape, you know. But what happened was, I did not really get judgmental towards God, but what happened was in college. Hey, listen, I didn't have sex till I was in college. I'm telling you the truth. I'm a late bloomer, I guess, but you know, it's not that I didn't want to. I didn't know how to. But when I started drinking alcohol, man, I'll tell you what, I was a quick learner. My higher power was alcohol. Really, truly was. It really, truly was. I got arrested for being public drunk in law school. Yeah. And one of the things that I want to say is that I didn't really think I had a problem drinking. And I never was an alcoholic until I got to AA. And how I got here was I got a drunk driving in 1979. Go back to 79. I was like Bill. You know, he had arrived, and then the stock market crashed in 29. Beginning of 79, I had arrived. I had a beautiful wife, car, nice home, 23 of them. And, you know, I was there. And overnight, I lost everything with that market collapse. And so I just drank. I had the first drunk driving in February. The second drunk driving was the day after Christmas of 79. And what happened is five parked cars ran into me. And that got me to AA. I didn't get sent to AA. I got sent to jail for a couple of weekends. But then the guy that I went to the drunk driving class with says, you want to go to AA with me? And what the hell, why not, you know? So I did, and that's where I learned the program. But I didn't. I did those half measures, right? So I want to... I got a couple more minutes. On page 25, this is where I'm at right now, and I'll tell you why I trust God today. My topic was, if you forgot, I didn't forget, I wrote it down, is trusting God. You can't trust a God that you think is going to punish you. But I want to tell you something. Whatever God you want to call him, there's a God out there that loves you and wants to help you, begging you to ask him for help. That's what he's doing. And it says here, at certain times, the great fact is nothing unless we have deep, effective spiritual experiences that revolution our whole attitude towards life and towards our fellows and towards God's universe. The central fact of our life and the central fact of my life, as well as your life, if you're sober any length of time, is that the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into your hearts and lived in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could not do ourselves. That's the only message I got. You got to trust God, clean house, and God bless you. Thank you for letting me share.